You're listening to ThoughtCast. I'm Jenny Attia, and I'm here in the Charles Hayden Planetarium in Boston with Noreen Grice, the operations coordinator of the planetarium. Noreen, you just did a fabulous show of the night sky here in the planetarium, but you also included some interesting facts about some of the new research that's going on here in Cambridge in astrophysics. Let me just jump to some of those scientists that are in the area doing such interesting work. You particularly talked about the Chandra X-ray Observatory here and scientists working there who are able to see in different wavelengths and therefore learn much more about what's up there than we generally would if we were just using our own vision.
That's right, because Chandra is an X-ray telescope. It can see high-energy particles that are not visible to human eyes, and when you combine that information with, say, a picture from the Hubble Space Telescope or the Spitzer Infrared Telescope or even a radio telescope from Earth, then you get a more complete view of what the object really looks like.
So we really have no idea what we're looking at when we look up at the night sky with just our own narrow visual band of white light that we're able to see.
Well, we get some view. It's sort of like walking in a room that's dimly lit, and you can kind of get an idea about maybe the placement of the furniture and some silhouettes of people, and then all of a sudden if the lights come on, whoa, all of a sudden you get the big picture. And so by observing in multi-wavelengths, we're turning on the lights, you know, to our understanding of what the different objects look like and being able to really focus on, you know, what these objects are. It helps us understand about the universe, about the temperature of objects in the universe, the structure of objects, really what it's made of. And I think everybody always wants to know what other things look like and how they fit in.
Light is energy. So the brighter the light or the more intense the light, the more energy the planet or the star would have.
Right. But then when things have so much energy that we can't see them with our own eyes, I mean, X-rays are high energy and gamma rays are really high energy. You can't see that. You know, even if you go to take an X-ray at a doctor's office, you know, you don't have X-ray eyes. But also, you know, it gives you a different viewpoint. I mean, right now you're glowing in infrared, but I don't have eyes to be able to see that. But an infrared detector would be able to see you.
Now, this observatory, which is at Kendall Square in Cambridge, the Chandra X-ray Observatory, actually is getting data from a telescope that's up there, past the Hubble, you were saying in your presentation. Where is this telescope and what's it able to do?
Okay, well, first of all, the Hubble telescope orbits the Earth about 360 miles above us. So it's low enough that space shuttle astronauts can get up there and repair it. And there's a mission planned for September 08 to do that. Chandra was deployed from the space shuttle, and then it had booster rockets that took it in a more distant orbit. It's a very elliptical orbit that takes it one-third of the way out to the moon. So it's really a very elongated orbit. It takes over 60 hours for the telescope to orbit the Earth. So it's very distant. We can't repair it if something goes wrong. But it's able to see these high energy particles. Basically, it's a series of shelled mirrors, and energy is bouncing off of these mirrors down into a detector, and then that information is being relayed back to the Earth. So we see these high energy particles, which look very different from visible particles. But when we combine the visible image, then all of a sudden we know what the object looks like. I mean, the Chandra is like a space detective, really, because, you know, people talk about things like black holes. Well, how can you see a black hole? It's black and space is black, but a black hole gives off X-rays. And if you have some detector that can pick up X-rays, voila, there's the location of the black hole.
Another of the scientists you were discussing in this planetarium show is another local, Dr. Margaret Geller, who works at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. You had some very interesting images up of some of her maps of many galaxies far beyond our own out there. What are these maps?
Yes, Dr. Geller and her colleagues have been mapping the position of galaxies in the near universe. Basically, if she can obtain an image of a galaxy, then she can plot its position. And when you combine the position of the different galaxies, then you start to see if there's some kind of a structure. I mean, It seems like everything in nature has some kind of a structure. So does the universe have a structure? Well, Dr. Geller is really one of the pioneers in trying to find out that. What is the structure of the universe? And she's been studying the position of galaxies with her colleagues for decades, really. They were one of the first groups to make these kind of maps. And she's also actually made some videos, So Many Galaxies, So Little Time. And it's really inspired a lot of other people to go into astronomy, I think.
She was able to detect sort of a stick man-like figure in her map of some of the nearby galaxies.
Yeah, the stick man was one of the first maps that she had. What it looked like was a simple drawing of a stick person. It was very strange, and she couldn't figure it out.
Is there a God up there after all, and is he a stick man, do you think?
Well, isn't that the question? I think everybody wants to feel assured that, you know, the universe is organized, and no matter what, everything will be okay. You know, I don't know. That always brings in the topic of faith versus science, and I think that you can combine the two.
The more she was able to see in the universe, the more she was able to map, and the stick man then sort of evaporated into the background as the picture became larger. So if he was a god, he was only a nearby one.
Well, maybe he was a reassuring face in the, you know, vastness of space that encouraged people to continue plotting. You know, we started to understand that there are a lot of galaxies out there, and if we keep mapping them, then it's actually very puzzling what is the structure of the universe. So it seemed simple at first with a stick man, and then it got more complicated. And, well, isn't that part of science? You know, when you're going in one direction, sometimes you need to turn into another direction to try to figure out the solution. And she's still working on this problem, she and her colleagues.
Is she able to map more and more because of more sophisticated equipment?
This is true, yes. I mean, the technology of telescopes has really changed. I think it was about 10 years ago, there's adaptive optics. One of the problems is that you can only make a mirror for a telescope only so big before the mirror bends, just from gravity's physically bends. But there are these new equipment called adaptive optics where you can actually intentionally bend a mirror to bring something in focus, and so you have these different, it's almost like pulleys, they're called actuators, which intentionally bend the mirror so that you can observe a whole bunch of galaxies at one time and then be able to map them. It's incredible, really.
You're listening to ThoughtCast. I'm Jenny Attia, and I'm here at the Hayden Planetarium talking with Noreen Grice, the operations coordinator here at the planetarium. Noreen, you also were discussing some very interesting scientists who are interested in exoplanets. What are those, and what value do they have in seeing them?
Well, I think it's amazing that people have looked so long for other planets in our solar system and then have moved on to find other planets around other stars. To think that we are not alone in our solar system, you know, we're not the only group of planets going around a star. We're now finding, you know, other systems which are like ours or have planets of different sizes, but for sure they're planets. These are objects which are traveling around other stars, you know, and you have to wonder, are there any planets that are habitable? And maybe somebody's looking back in our direction wondering about us.
So an exoplanet is a planet circling a star that's not in our solar system.
Right, exoplanet or extrasolar planet, those are similar terms. And there have been discoveries of over 100 planets around other stars. And it's just amazing. There are more planets we know of around other stars than in our own solar system.
Two scientists in particular have been looking at these exoplanets that you mentioned. One is Dr. Sarah Seeger at MIT, and the other is Dr. David Charbonneau at the Harvard-Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. Do they work together in any way, do you know? Are they collaborating? Are they sort of overlapping and studying the same planets?
Well, these scientists are actually on two different teams, but I think regardless of them not working physically together, their combined knowledge is adding to what we understand about these other planets. So, I mean, I think it's just really interesting that you've got two different teams which shows that there's a lot of interest in finding other planets.
You only had so much time in this planetarium show to discuss new research going on in Cambridge, but you mentioned that there were other people doing things in the area that you didn't have time for. Any thoughts on just a few ideas of what else is out there in Cambridge? Who else is working on astrophysics?
It's hard to mention so many names. I mean, there's hundreds of scientists at Harvard and a smaller amount at MIT, but MIT, you've got a lot of planetary scientists. I mean, Dr. Binzel, who studies asteroids, is really, you know, the expert on that. And he's involved in the New Horizons mission to Pluto, and I mean, isn't everybody talking about Pluto? You know, it's something near and dear to everybody. People in Cambridge are studying, you know, planets, objects in our solar system, galaxies, stars which have you know blown up into supernovae. You name the topic and you can find somebody in Cambridge who is studying it. So it's really sort of a mecca here in Cambridge.
You're listening to ThoughtCast. I'm Jenny Attia and I'm talking with Noreen Grice. Noreen, the burning question in my mind is, how does this planetarium work? We're looking at this strange object that rotates with lots of different dials on it. How are we able to sit in this room and see the sky?
Well, isn't that the amazing thing? The planetarium, if you've never been to the planetarium before, it's a room with a curved dome ceiling, which is going to be our sky. And the large object in the center of the room, which actually weighs as much as a school bus and looks like some big weightlifting equipment, is our Zeiss star projector. It has lots of lenses which look like round windows on them, and the lenses are photochemically etched star plates. Inside each end of the machine are large light bulbs, and when we turn on the light, it shines through the lenses and shines star fields up on the ceiling. It all patches together to create the night sky. We can see the night sky from anywhere on Earth and at any time in history.
What is beyond our night sky? We can only see so much.
Right. We're looking, our night sky is from our perspective on the Earth. Unfortunately, our star projector can't show us other perspective planets. Other star projectors can. But, you know, when you're looking up at the night sky, you're looking at just a portion of our Milky Way galaxy. There are so many interesting parts of the Milky Way. You know, we're not in the center of the galaxy. We're actually, it could be a black hole, so that's a good thing. But we're kind of on the edge of a spiral arm. And so we see stars in our galaxy, and there's even places where you can look up with your eye and see galaxies which are beyond the Milky Way.
You just said something pretty interesting to me. You said possibly the middle of the Milky Way galaxy is a black hole?
That's right. What's turned out is that a lot of astronomers have found in the centers of many galaxies are black holes. And we're not sure whether some of these are supermassive black holes, which may be smaller black holes which have combined together. And these are the ending lives of really giant, supermassive stars that are just exploded, and the cores have continued to shrink, and then warp the fabric of space around them. You have to have a really big star for that to happen, and our sun is not a really big star, so that won't happen to our sun.
But I certainly hope not.
No, but when you're looking up at the night sky, you know, it's kind of like a photo album. You know, if you look in someone's photo album, you're going to see pictures of people of different ages and different sizes and long hair, short hair. And if you look in the sky, you're looking at stars of different color, stars of different sizes, stars of different temperature, and stars of different ages. And so these stars are all going through their different life cycle. And some, I mean, they all look very dim because the next closest star is over 4 light years away. And we don't know how to travel as fast as light, so it's very far away. Our sun is the closest star to us. It's only 93 million miles away. But these stars, some of them are really huge. Even though they look small, they're just really far away. And when they end their lives, they could become, you know, a supernova remnant or a black hole. There's a lot of possibility up there.
On that dire note, let me ask you my last question, which is, do you think you're able to inspire children or students to become interested in science and perhaps become scientists themselves?
I hope I can inspire people. I remember when I was very little, I used to come to the planetarium, and it was always my favorite place, and I thought, well, I thought only very important people could work here. I didn't know a regular person could work here. So I'm actually doing the the job that I always dreamed about, so I hope that I'm inspiring the next group of people.
Noreen Grice, thank you so much.
You're welcome.